Blog Talk Radio.
The black child on the other hand, he can't, because if he's born in that same hospital, he can't just have to inherit it. He said he could can gain belief from everything that he has.
Relationships don't work between black people. Racism, white supremacy is the reason.
Absolutely.
Can't get a job in the hood and you educated. Racism, white supremacy.
Absolutely.
Can't get an education in the hood because it's expensive. Racism, white supremacy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Poor education in the hood you live in. Racism, white supremacy.
Absolutely.
You live next to poor people who will rob your ass, steal and kill your ass because they don't have no options and they don't have no option to critically think. Racism, white supremacy.
Yeah.
And I see that that's a problem. So I wanted to just make a pimp decision.
$1 trillion flow. From L.A. to Miami. Minnesota to Detroit. Chicago. Alabama. Texas. Chicago. People of Maryland, love. Atlanta, Georgia, love. The $1 billion club. Over enough. Enough for everybody. He was made for us to be rich. Made for us to be brilliant. People of color. People of Maryland. You ask not, you have not. We ask it for what's ours. We're calling. Because we are the government. $1 trillion flow coming from Egypt. Coming from the mother country, Africa. To New York and Chicago. The birthplace of Malcolm X. The birthplace of Martin Luther King. Duchamp. I'm talking about $1 trillion flow. The slave train. I'm talking about Paul Lawrence done by Robeson. The slave train, the $1 billion flow. You and me, me and you.
$1 trillion.
Poor and rich. We are rich because we're in the $1 billion flow. Yes, you can have that new Benz. Yes, you can have that Beamer. Yes, you can have that Rose. Yes, you can have that Cadillac. Yes, you can have that up on the hill up in New York, up in California, out in Oakland, Compton. $1 billion out of the ghetto and out of poverty. I need the $1 billion flow. Get what I want, have what I want.
on my job. I'm in the $1 billion flow in my business. I'm in the $1 billion flow. Why don't you get in the flow of the billionaire? The trillionaire.
To lift the badges and incidents of slavery off the shoulders of black folks. Now, here you are bringing in all these immigrants over black folks. And here's what you do when you bring them all into black folks. You do the same thing they were doing in 1790 when they brought in all these immigrants. You bring in millions of immigrants over black folks from Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Northern Europe. You brought them in over black folks. When you bring in immigrants, here's what happens. You got black folks that are branded. They don't get any benefits for being living in this country. They're branded as being slaves. They get zero benefits. Now, they're not immigrants. Now, watch what on the other side. Now, when immigrants come in, watch the benefits they get. They go past black folks at 200 miles an hour, past them. That's why in all these cities, in Chocolate City, they do better right here in Chocolate City. Now, they're underneath the immigrants. The immigrants, they come in the country, they get a point.
Hey there, homeowner. Did you know you could save up to $200 a month with solar panels at no cost to you, plus get a check?
Black folks in this country. And that's the dilemma. Nobody wants to address the issues of what they do. They just try to use very broad and ambiguous terms to make black folks disappear and become unnecessary, irrelevant in this society.
You know, I'm going to go past the question of how is it that blacks are always on the bottom. I'm going to go past that because in your answer there, you two certainly said you just answered.
That's right. See, that 99.5% of everything of value in the country was maldistributed into everybody's hands except black folk. Black folk have been locked into only one percent of anything of value in this country now for over 460 years. It is impossible, Ross, in comparative and theoretical terms, for blacks to be a competitive people. Can't be done. You can't make it off of 0.5% in a nation that is it is a competitive society where people are competing. They can't compete. What are they going to compete with?
You ask the probing question. How is it that black civil rights, the black civil rights era, produced more gains for other class groups than the intended beneficiary, blacks?
For a very simple reason, and that is through inherited wealth. I just told you a few minutes ago that 99% of everything was contributed, was maldistributed into the hands of the dominant white society, but now 87% of it is frozen, locked in there. It's locked into the dominant white society, into their trust accounts, banks, institutions, universities, communities, and their culture. You can't exactly cannot get access to it. That's why I'm going to use the present administration, Dr. Trump. One of the first things they're going to focus on is inherited wealth, and famous tax structure. They're going to get passed on all these rights and benefits to their offspring. And black folk, on the other hand, are going to be confronted by white kids, for instance, coming. A white child gets 87% of what he needs to be a competitive individual in our society at birth. As soon as he hits the air in the hospital, he gets 87% because everything he needs will happen is in the white society. He can get access to it anytime he wants. But the black child, on the other hand, he can't compete because when he's born in that same hospital, there's nothing inheritable that he can gain. So everything that blacks have been focusing on for the last 100 years is not inheritable. Food stamps, welfare, public housing, and a job, you cannot inherit it. So the black child is not competitive. He can't compete with a white child. So in the morning, even if he wants a job, he got to dress up and go to a white neighborhood or somebody else's neighborhood to try to look for a job. It's impossible. He can't compete. That's why he's a permanent underclass.
You say permanent underclass, which begs the question, is there any hope that the issue of race will ever be resolved in this country?
I think there's a very, very slight chance that it can be resolved. But it's going to be up to black folks to do it, though. See, because they're going to be pushed back from the dominant society because they got a social construct that excludes black folks. And so later on, you can ask me about it. The key is going to be how black folks classify themselves. See, first of all, black folks got to classify themselves as native blacks. Make sure there's a distinct difference between a black coming from Africa and a black coming from the Caribbean. Native black. That means people that were born and raised in this country 400 or 500 years ago that are peculiar to the system. That's it. And if you focus on that, then say, now, what is special about those native blacks? Then you have to say, they are exceptional people. Black people in America are exceptionally special people. Now, we have politicians running around the country every day talking about America is an exceptional nation.
And that, and because America is a such a nation based on the fact that they have a democracy, it's told to be the cradle of democracy, and that they are, have the most liberal immigration policies, and that people can vote through all these kind of things. They said, therefore, the American's political entity is supposed to be, and therefore they should be given special favors among all the nations of the world. What I say is that if that's true, then black people in America are exceptional people. They're an exception within an exception, because see, nobody's been treated like black folks. You keep talking about this is a land of immigrants. And see, but black folks are only non-immigrants. You can't keep bringing immigrants into the country over black folk and giving them special benefits in that term. That's why blacks can't compete. And can I take about a minute to get this point out for you?
Yeah.
See, there are four or five things. Right now they're debating the DACA. That's going to be the death knell of black folks. That's going to be the nail in the coffin for black folks. Because, see, this nation set up the first immigration laws in 1790. It says this is an immigrant nation. And any people of the world that can pass for or look like whites can come here and get special benefits for us. They can come here and get it. But the only people that can't get it are black folks. And then everybody was invited to come here. That's, and they maldistribute all the resources. And they started out by putting most of the resources started with the land, which blacks couldn't get. But let me go back to this.
Can I stop you just
for
one second here? Because I want you to take that first.
Okay.
So progressives, to use that term, when they look at the policies of this particular administration that's in power right now, Republicans control the White House, the Senate, and the Congress, and you talk about DACA, the sense is that most progressives, most black folks want to do, quote, unquote, the humane thing and make sure that those that are born here have rights and are not exported. And their parents aren't are put out of the country. So are you on the other side of that argument?
No. What I'm saying is that to do that, it is first is unjustifiable. It's illegal and unconstitutional, and it's the worst form of injustice that you commit against black folks, because what you're violating is black folks' rights. So see, you cannot see the 13th Amendment. See, let's go back for a second. The 13th Amendment came into existence after the Civil War. It says very clearly, Ron, that it mandates that black folks be treated in all manners similar to whites in this nation. Now, but immigration policies and bringing in immigrants only negatively impacts black folks. It's not impacting anybody else. Black folks are the only injured parties by immigration. Then you go to the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment says that black, and remember the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, don't say the rent for black folks, that black folks must have due process and equal protection under law. If black folks are the only people being negatively impacted by immigrants, you're violating the 14th Amendment. There should be all kind of lawsuits right now raised by black folks. And then the Civil Rights Law of 1865 and 1866 said very specifically, Rock, that every level of government is mandated to use all necessary means to lift the badges and incidents of slavery off the shoulders of the black folks. Now, here you are bringing in all these immigrants over black folks. And here's what you do when you bring them all into black folks. You do the same thing they were doing in 1790 when they brought in all these immigrants. You bring in millions of immigrants over black folks from Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, Northern Europe. They brought them in over black folks. When you bring in immigrants, here's what happens. You got black folks that are branded. They don't get any benefit for being living in this country. They're branded as being slaves. They get zero benefits. Now, they're not immigrants. Now, watch on the side. If the immigrants come in, watch the benefits they get. They pass black folks at $200 an hour. That's why in all these cities, the chocolate city, they do it right here in the city. Now, at least the immigrants. The immigrants come in the country, they get a full of black folks for being an immigrant. Blacks are the only non-immigrants. Two, they classified, all of them are classified as white. And, the Arabs, Asians, Hispanics, they've all been classified as white. Even American Indians back in the 1890s were classified as white. Get a white, that's not the point. Get a black folks and getting access to resources and benefits. The third thing they get the benefits of being put into a minority category. They classified as minorities. Thirdly, they come in a culture. They can now establish a culture, and they can now show you that the last statistic that came up was the United States Department of Labor says that everybody's over black folks. Black folks have not moved one iota in 150 years. It's still on the bottom, underneath the society, outside of it.
You said something earlier And the purpose of that is because on the surface, it would be like, hey, everybody here that's black is a certain way. Why are you making that delineation?
That's a good point. You know why? Because you see, those who come from Jamaica are coming in from Africa. They have not been treated like black folks in this country. Firstly, and secondly, historically, they have had historical experience. They come here voluntarily. They come, they bring some cultural aspects from Africa. They can go back in as they want. But the black people in this country are exceptional people. Those have been mistreated, maltreated like this. Black people are exceptional. They're the only people who came here after Africa. Poorly, one. Two, they're the only people denied their humanity. Three, they were the only people denied right to enjoy the fruits of their labor. Four, they were the only people with the right to sit in government. Five, they were the only people that had the right to vote. Six, they were the only people denied the right to education. The most patriotic people waving the Confederate. The most patriotic people in this country are black people. They're black. Because you see, 99% of all those blacks are direct descendants of slaves. They've been here before. 99% of all the other people around this country. They are special people. And all special people, they need to be recognized, appreciated, and reparated for what they've done in this country, building this country. They're the ones that built the bridge, the road, the timber, the trees, to clear the land. It's a tobacco, cotton, indigo. And everyone set this country. The people from Africa became here voluntarily. And most important, if you lump in with black people, then you come in with the justification that we don't black people. Because you see, it is their heritage, it's history, it's their code of conduct, more it's their badge of honor. It symbolizes the indebtedness this country has to live. This country does not have any indebtedness that people from Africa. You don't have an indebtedness to people coming in from the Bahamas. If you lump black folk in there, you deprive black folk of the benefit that debt is owed them. Don't do that. You are on fire.
Let's keep going here. And one deal. I want to know the historical aspect of it. You know, something that is what is 50-year history, for example, is Martin Luther King's colorblind dream. Did his and the civil rights movement focus on integration, having the ability sit at the counter with the dominant society and open up a lot of doors where there was obviously very clear, legalized race to knock down those barriers. Did that take focus off of blacks, whites?
Yes, it did. Yes, it is. And let me go back before you get to the back of what Martin Luther King, and again, Martin Luther King and the civil rights did the best they could at that particular time, you know, what they thought was right. But they didn't look far enough down the road, and they got bamboozled and tripped. Because you see, the initial decision and the suit that was filed for what you all might call social nation, the civil rights movement, was filed in McLean, South Carolina. And what those black folks filed, they filed for desegregation. And what desegregation means, what Anderson talks about, we don't control those resources. We don't have any resources. And what was happening in South Carolina back in 1940, he said when that lawsuit was filed, those black kids were walking to school and a church wrote there's rain, so we're trying to get to school. When they got to school, they didn't have the slaves in those schools. Like in North Carolina, I was from South Carolina, North Carolina, where we spent the first week of school every year cleaning up old textbooks, old materials, the new stuff that's coming from the white school. Whites got all the new materials. They got all the fabric and the tools, the machinery, technology. We got the used broken down. They had to fix it up. Spend the first week of school with big erasers, cleaning up the books and putting tape on them. The white kids had swimming pools in their schools. We didn't have swimming pools. We used to have to go down and dam up the creek to swim. And so more importantly, the white kids rode the buses. We walked. And the worst part was that the state was giving something like about $12 for every white child to go to school, but only $1.50 for a black child to go to school. What the McLean, South Carolina people are saying is that we won't have equal control of the resources, that you began to maldistribute in the 1990s to everybody but us. We won't have power to share of it. And so we went to the Supreme Court by 1954. At that point, what black folk wanted. product was to have equal treatment. Blacks had miraculously acquired a lot of communities. They had bars, white professional football teams, baseball teams. We had a lot. We had a land. We had land there. And by 1920, black folk had acquired about 20 million acres of land in this country that they had to buy. White folks didn't buy their land. They got it free on land grant. And so when Martin Luther came along, what he says is that but it would end up, he triggered it by simply saying, the best thing we can do for blacks in the country is eradicate anything, sanitize everything. Let's get rid of all aspects of blackness. That means decent. That, so they changed it to social integration. Social integration is a weakening process. But if I put cream in a coffee, and the coffee is stronger, I'm weakening. Water is clean, I'm weakening. So when Martin Luther came in, he picked it up and he started saying, what we want is a show that we are acceptable, that we can be that, and to take the focus off our blackness. And when that started, they were successful. Then the black leadership gave up and say, hey, we can do it anymore, so we'll just go with what we call benign neglect and focus on it, which make black focus. And that way nobody has to focus on the black issues anymore. And when Martin Luther took focus off of black folk and put it on socially disadvantaged, they would twist it up and merge into it, morph into what we call political for everybody. And so therefore they corrupted and they distorted the 13th Amendment. These laws were written specifically and only for black people. And all these immigrants have no, there's no justification for it.
Okay, so you know, we certainly have the luxury of hindsight now. And doing that, not Monday morning quarterbacking, but 50 years later quarterbacking, you know. So what should have been the focus to achieve a status for black folks that would have prevented 50 years later there being a permanent underclass?
Oh, Rock, you always ask the question that I don't target. What they should have done if the civil movement say, first of all, we do integration, let's go back to that. What was the primary purpose of slavery? What was the primary purpose?
Yeah.
The primary purpose of slavery was to classify black people, strip them of their humanity, and to make them classify them as three different human beings, and classify them as property. And so, and the start of property, that they could own them, they could own them in any other property. And that's why George said that they are in this new the wealth would be embedded to start first with land. And so George Washington said, in that case, the black and owning property. George Washington said, to give me 100,000 acres of free land. Thomas just said, to give him 100,000 acres of free land, give you 100,000 acres of free land. Pat Henry says, I want 65,000 acres of free land. Every white immigrant coming to the country to become 650 acres of free land, free. And then they get another 150 acres for the slave home. So, and in my mind, I railroaded something like 54 million acres of free land across the nation. Everybody got free land except black folks. And
just stop there. The basis for building foundation of wealth
and land. And blacks couldn't get 40 acres of land. Blacks couldn't get, I'd get free land. Because land was property and blacks would have this property. Bad things like future slave laws. You are property. You're no different than the land. That's another thing called the American dream that you hear politics. The American dream was anybody coming from any place around the world, from the Middle East, Asia, Africa, to America, and they can get what's called the American dream. They're still doing it right now. That's what the doctor is. They come into this country looking for it. The American dream is unearned benefits. Slavery was unearned benefits. So they come to this country right now getting unearned benefits with black folks care. And that's how they go right at black folks. And it's illegal, unconstitutional. But nobody raised that issue. All these discussions about immigrants, everybody says that black being negatively impacted. You got all these programs for immigrants.
Yes.
When they go right, we're going to give immigrants social security, welfare, public housing, all that. But you got to get the black folks.
I don't think we fully get it's your idea of what right what should have been happening.
So let me go back. So what the first thing they should have done is what we first want to do is go back and click the purpose and address the purpose of slavery. What's the purpose of slavery? The purpose of slavery was to handicap a specific group of people and handicap them and hold them while we provide the hope. So what they first thing they should have done is say, if this nation is maldistributed, distributed 100% of all the land, resources, businesses, income, privileges, rights, and controls of the government to the white. That's the first we must address. We must go back and look at the address, and they didn't never did that. Even when they came out of slavery, there was no wealth. The average white coming out of at the end of slavery had 3,500 times more than black. Black folks had never controlled anything greater than 0.5%. In the present terms of rock, today, it didn't change the slavery. That right now, we got something like about 500 to 600 white billionaires. We got five to six hundred white billionaires in this country. And I think two or three of them has everything in their name that belong white. Black only controlled zero. That's why I write 38% of the black folk America are beneath the poverty line. You got about another third sitting right on the poverty line. They lose the house of their car. And they can't compete. As a matter of fact, if black folks own so small of my wealth country, and if they were to stop racism remarks, and it would take black folks another 238 years to catch up with white folks on the day in terms of wealth ownership. Two white men right now own more wealth than all 4 million black folks. How can you compete with that when you only control nothing? And all they're giving is things on narrative. And it's like a real life monopoly game. You don't own the control land going around the board. You can't own the water company or the railroad. You own nothing. You're going to leave the bank or you're going to jail.
I'm hearing you talk about going into the schools. What you did for the first week, whatever it was to clean up the old books that you got from. That was more hand-me-downs. And
right.
I went to a segregated elementary school. And
you
did? Yeah, absolutely. And I remember that we had the books that had come down from the school just up the street from where we were.
See, that's not right.
Right. So, it felt as if there was a foundation at all black elementary schools that was trying to lift up with education. The question is, has education been a equalizer?
To equalize for everybody but black. And the amazing part of that is that folks now hold the academic achievement on the earth. All during the slavery for 360 years, and I dare to talk about this on the Fox channels where are these white redneck conservatives maybe. But the problem is that in this country, they talk about how ignorant black folk are. They never say yes, if black folk are ignorant, it was imposed ignorance. For 360 years, it was against the Little Rock to be caught teaching a black person reading right.
Yeah.
It'll cost you 39 lashes and $100,000 teach a black person. And that was all the way up to the 1860s. So in 1860, when blacks came out of slavery, you got up to 96% black folks could not read right into the country. So the black people, white immigrants in the country, they had 96%. 32. And so, but between 1865 and 1895, black folks reduced their literacy rate from almost 196% down to 47%. And they did it by themselves, basically. They hold a record of achievement. Nobody in the history of the world has ever come out of slavery and be able to reduce their literacy rate by in half in 30-year time period. But what happened, it didn't benefit black folks. By 1950, as an example, there was black folk never got the benefits of getting an education. There were no benefits for education achievement. That's why white teachers were making twice or three times more than a black teacher in the 1950s. In the 1950s, alone in teaching degree, he could only earn 50 cents of half of what a white dropout was earning. So the benefits were just before. That's why right now I got all these black folks going to the university, or with the university, coming out with master's degrees, but they don't master anything. They got a master's degree, but master nothing. And they actually have person in McDonald's or King of Windows with college degrees because they don't have a community, they have no wealth base, they have no businesses. So they still depend on the to use their education. And to use their education, the white society puts the value of that education. You can have a doctor's degree, but I'm going to pay you what I want to pay you because you have no business. And consequently, benefits of education to attract black folks like you attract everybody else.
And I have a rather explosive question to
touch on it, but I want to ask you this way. As we think about it, I do not know that have been so to hate who they are as black, native black.
Right.
So there is hatred and distrust within the community. There is hatred of blacks, more so than any other population of people, by large societies of folks around the world. Now, a lot of reasons are, that hatred is generated in part because of how culture is exported, how are seen through in so many negative ways through culture. So we serve all of that, but I'm asking you, PhD, is
who in Europe that black folks typified. Just the opposite. When people look in the mirror, people always hold love the closest to them, rock. And white people look at her and say, we are white and they are black in color. So therefore, what am I going to tell them sellers? And they love them. So therefore, they can symbolize goodness, angelic, honesty, everything in name. It's values. They value their skin because they had white skin. Black, on the other hand, signifies just the opposite. Evil, dirty, old, foolish, and ignorant. And so that was the first thing they did on black folks. That's the thing they began to handicap black folks. One thing in those European countries and the Asian countries, they had code of conduct that says anytime somebody offends you or your family, you've got a blind obligation to defend yourself. In Europe and in Asia, they had what's called dueling. You know, the sword was fought it out. Or in the United States West, they had shootouts. But the black folks never defended themselves. And what white said in their psyche is there's no honor in being a slave. There's nothing. And so consequently, if you allow us, anybody else, to enslave you for 460 years, we have no respect for you, no appreciation for you. We don't value you. And the last thing they did was say that now is that because you let us do this to you, we hate you because lastly, is because you're a white people. You spend all your time trying to get on with us. There was a white kid about eating. Make up, never come after you take a farm. All to do is get your back at their back at all to be a hand server to wait on us, to help us, to comfort us.
The most forgiving people on earth.
Most forgiving person on earth. He said, you're always forgiving, compromising, acquiescing, and going on kissing on for trying to get along with them and being acceptable. And that's what happened with the whole civil rights movement. And so now when these civil rights leaders always beg and march and demonstrate and say, just please accept us. Let us come into your home, come into your school, your neighborhood. Whites don't have any respect for you. And one of my friends was a Bay of Pigs hero in the South. And I might tell me the same thing as fact, whites, we don't like to be around you. It's because you beg all the time. You never demand anything. And there was a white Asian writer for a newspaper in San Francisco. He told me the same thing. He said, I just like folks. It's not because of who they are. I hate them for their attitude, to get along with them rather than sit there and say, no, I'm not going to do that and demand rights and respect. He said, I don't like black people. And I agreed. I said, you know what? You're right. Slavery would have ended, Rock. Slavery would not have lasted 1 month back in the 15th, 16th century if black folks said, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going for it. You can kill me if you want. That's fine. You lose the money because you bought me. But I tell you, but if you try to enslave me, rob me, my kids, deny me the resources, and have a decent quality of life, humanity for 4 to 6 years, I'll die first, and I'll take you with me, and your mama, and your kids, and everything else. But the people never stood up. And the worst part about it, and not the African countries, in all the 400 years of slavery and segregation, the African countries, that's why I said, don't black African Americans. They did not send not one vote. They did not send one vote to America to rescue or to the kids who have been enslaved, who have been slaughtered. They did one vote.
We sit here on campus at Howard University in Washington, D.C., and your book about the unique special history of between blacks and the District of Columbia. Tell us about that.
Well, this, what, Mexico, along with throughout history, was always one of the big slave capitals. And all around all these buildings around here, the black folk built all the buildings in the first place. They were the laborers that built all the major buildings. But they had slave auctions and went on the house fund and down east of every house. The big slave quarters and over in Virginia, where they're selling slaves. Washington, D.C. was a slave capital, okay? That's the first thing. The second thing that Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. was the home of a first to be enslaved in the White House as servants. And ask me a question again, because I don't want that. Something slipped out of my mind.
No, just the special relationship between black and the District of Columbia.
Right. And see, right now, and when I came to Washington, D.C., as an example, this to show you I came to Washington with President Carter back in 1970s. At that particular time, it had been as it was always through slavery. I told you, during the slavery period, Washington was called Chocolate City. It was the chocolate city of the nation. And at that point in time, it was 78% black.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
78% black. Now down to 43%. And you got immigrants, you got gentrification, where whites are coming to the city. You got privatization of the property. And so black folk is now from 70% down to about 42-43%. And look what happened now. As they shrunk down, black folk are now moved to Peay County. And in the city now, if I look at the wealth level, the average wealth, again, wealth is a key for survival. The average wealth of a white person living in Washington, D.C. is about $235,000. But the average wealth base for a black living in D.C. is $3,500. Because they you're down the chicken chain. Because black folks still confuse income with wealth. That's a difference. That's a major difference. You go over to PG County, all those blacks that left Washington sold their houses for chicken chain and went to PG County. Look at what happened over there. Over there, that you have the highest concentration of educated blacks in America living in PG County. You have the highest concentration of wealthy blacks in the United States living in PG County. I go to PG County, guess who's gonna run all the business and all the stores? Immigrants. And over there, the Hispanics who've been here less than 35 years now got five times the wealth base of blacks in PG County, where you got the highest concentration of blacks in the United States as well.
Educated.
Yeah. They're still on the bottom.
Let's get into a little bit, and then we brought Trump back also. But in terms of now the policies that are coming out of this government regarding, you talk about, for example, there's several things, but let's just deal with healthcare.
Well, healthcare, there's a direct link between having healthcare, having good health, and having money. That's the biggest connection. I know for about Wayne State University Medical School in Washington, Detroit, you said invite me to come in to be the keynote speaker for the health division. I said, I'm not a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. They said, yeah, but I said, you're the only person in this country that speaks and relates wealth to having good health.
Mm-hmm.
They said that most of these blacks in the country who can't afford insurance, can't afford proper Medicare, can't afford proper food, you say if you don't have the money, you're gonna suffer.
Yeah.
They said, you're the only person, you said, just tell us, you've got to have the wealth and the power and to be able to afford the necessary things you have to have a comfortable life and a healthy lifestyle. And I said, that's right. So I was a keynote speaker for them for years. And right now, if you got a poverty rate in the United States where 38% of the black folks need the poverty line, 36% of all the black children are beneath the poverty line, how do you expect them to be healthy? How do you expect them to who's going to take care of them for the diseases, everything else, and the physical injuries? And so they don't have the base to do it. And nobody makes the issue out of it.
Yeah.
And so consequently, you cannot have a healthy body and a healthy mind when you have no money and resources to do it.
Describe your thoughts, your feelings about the presidency of Barack Obama as it relates to black America. And we were just talking about health care there. Was sort of one of his signature initiatives, the Affordable Care Act, was that something that was foundationally correct to help, obviously, everybody in the country, but especially blacks who could perhaps benefit from universal health care, or is establishing that another form of and what you described earlier as black folks' beggar?
I'm not that invested into knowing all the intricacies of his healthcare program. I stayed away from that.
Mm.
And but what when he could have done some other things that could have balanced it's not civil rights, it's not social integration that determines the quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And because right now, it's what you own and control. Black folks who own and control 0.5%, they haven't got a snowball's chance of getting any insurance or getting anything else that's quality-based.
I have a good friend whose mantra is what he says the king's position was towards the latter part of his life, and that is proportional economics.
Yes. He started getting into that right before he got assassinated,
yeah,
about 3 or 4 months. But Martin Luther said, I've come to decide, come to learn that after 10 years that they cannot have real true social integration unless you have economic integration, and you cannot have economic integration unless you go back and redistribute some of the wealth, resources, and opportunities into the hands of black folks.
Mm-hmm.
He said that, unfortunately, I've learned that, but it's a little late then, but he spent 10 years pushing everybody's wagon, pushing diversity, multicultural, and taking care of the world, and for black to be altruistic and to subject themselves to abuses, to take physical abuse, and rather than saying, no, we don't need to go back and rebuild these black communities and give them more resources.
So we've got about 10 minutes left, man. That's how fast this time has gone by. Let's start to discuss. This is what you just described is a deep, dark hole.
It is.
Unfortunately, I think it would be difficult for anyone to argue with some of your analysis here. Much of what you're talking about is rooted in obvious reality. Given that that's the case, let's please start this. We can't leave here without some hope, you know, to start thinking about what you, as such a veteran observer, economist, someone who has paid attention to this arc. Let's start talking about some solutions.
Oh, I love that. That's my favorite thing. And to salute, there are several things you can do very quickly. First of all, black folks need to understand what you're saying, that they are in a deep, dark hole. Okay, and they're locked in that deep, dark hole by some institutions. The first institution is the United States Constitution. That's got them locked in the box. And nobody's ever raised any issue about the United States Constitution.
And so I'm going to ask you, because you talk about it in the book. They ain't got to buy your book. They made me go to the library. But they need to read your book, man. Be read, people. So you talk about the Constitution a little bit. Talk a little bit about the dark side.
Right.
Give us a little bit of that, and then we want to come back and talk to the solutions.
Okay, good. And see, the dark side, the Constitution was written to be the first affirmative action plan in the entire United States. But nobody understands it. It's an affirmative action plan for whites, okay? And what they're saying is that these people, and we're going to make sure these people are locked in box. And we're going to build this Constitution based on two things.
Yeah.
We're going to use a whole body of people to enrich us, to bring comfort to us. And at the same time, we're going to talk about everybody having equal opportunity, being the land of freedom.
Sure.
But we're going to shut these people down. They're not going to have any freedom.
Yeah.
And so before they threw the Constitution up in 17...
Hold it. Because, you know, there's just something there that just like boom, you know.
Okay.
And because that's like, to use the language of Don King,
mm-hmm,
the boxing promoter, that's the original trickeration.
That's right. That's
the original trick.
That's it. And the Constitution is the basis for all these things. It was based on trickery. Because what they did, they set it up so they said Philadelphia in 1789, they met there and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to start writing this Constitution. And what we're going to do, how do we justify bringing in all these people here looking for free land and free Indian land and free black labor to get honor and benefits? At the same time, we're going to talk about that all these people have a right to life, liberty, and pursuit. And they said, initially it says property.
Yeah.
But Thomas Jefferson said, we can't say property. Let's go back into the Constitution, rewrite it,
yeah,
and say happiness.
Yeah.
See, because so they call it bamboo and said, nobody coming across the world, coming around the world just to look for happiness in America. They were coming here looking for free,
yeah,
honor, and benefits.
Yeah.
So what they said, well, here's the trick we're going to do. We're going to write this document. They spent a whole week with the doors locked and the shutters drawn. See, how do we write a Constitution that's going to lock black men and nobody recognize it? What they say, here's what we do in the Constitution. Let's use coded language. And say that one coded language for whites and a coded language to talk about black folks. And so in the Constitution, we talk about all people. We talk about whites. We say citizens, we talk about whites. language, and the people. When they say the people, they talk about white, blacks who are property. So when the Constitution says the people is all the people, they talk about white. Blacks are property, they talk about it equal to an animal. So when they talk about in the Constitution, look at it and read it, it says, when they talk about black folks, it says those who are in bondage, those who are indebted, those who have specific property, that specific group of people, those who are unhappily lost, they're talking about black folks. They use it, and they say, always use coded language. And bring it up to date right quick so I can get off this point. I know the time is running out. See, Ronald Reagan told the country the same thing when he came into office in 82.
Yeah.
See, when I left the White House with President Carter,
right,
with his administration, when Reagan came in, one of the first things he did, he called Haldeman into the office and said, when you start talking about black issues in America, make sure you use coded language.
Yeah.
He said, never say the things specifically, solely, directly against blacks.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what you do is use a very broad, ambiguous language. He says, and the jigs.
Yeah, welfare queen.
Yeah, the jigs, they never know what you're talking about. Use very broad words like minority, poor folk, people of color.
Yeah.
That way they never know they ain't going to get a darn thing out of it. We can hide it. So they use hidden codes to be able to get the Constitution to define what whites will get, what immigrants will get, and nothing that blacks are going to get. Okay? That coding is still being used today to talk about diversity, multicultural, people of color.
Yeah.
They're saying, let's pretend that black folks don't exist. And it's no public.
That was Dr. Claude Hanselman talking about racism in economics. And tonight here we're talking about economics. And the things that Dr. Hanselman was talking about is still going on today. It ain't stopped. It's still going on. It's still happening.
Policy is going to say specifically for black folks. Nothing going to address this. And that's what not one president in the United States, including Obama, has ever done anything specifically and solely to address the needs of black folks. Not one politician. As soon as a politician goes and gets an office, even if he's black, first thing he says is that I got to represent all the people. I got to represent everybody. I can't do anything for black folks, but I can do things for Jews, Arabs, Asians, Hispanics, midgets, handicapped, transgenders, anything. But I can never do anything for black folk. So what that does is freezes black folk in the lowest level of a real-life monopoly game.
And so now let's talk about some solutions.
Okay. Now, the solution, first thing I would tell black folk do is understand, declare yourself to be a native people, native black. You're the oldest population here, point two. And then and declare your exceptionality. Say that you're entitled to things that have never been given to you, that you're exceptional people, and you've been mistreated, maltreated. And say, because of that, don't include me in these very broad, ambiguous groups. To get out of affirmative action. I have the dubious honor of writing the first affirmative action plan in the United States in 1971. But it's for minorities. I wrote it for black folks. But it was diluted, watered down, and corrupted about 6 to 7 months after I wrote it. It went all over the country. Then it was for that affirmative action for all people. And so I want blacks to get out of affirmative action and go for reparations.
I was getting ready to say that very clearly.
That's right.
You're saying affirmative action. Get away from that.
Get away from
it. Talk specifically, succinctly about reparations.
That's right.
God bless you on this Saturday. My design here, and that was Dr. Henry Clark, Clark Anderson talking about reparations. And talk about weird tradition of black. But it's all in God's hands. God put it all in his hands tonight. We ain't got too long to pray, but God know our name, so I'm praying for you tonight. God bless you, Dr. Cook, sister, Dr. Christian. God bless you, praying for you. God knows where you're at, you know what your name is. I'm praying for you. Sister Scott, give me a call. I'm setting up. All is well tonight. I feel God going to do something special. Just go out for them that are sick. This is divine healing tonight, and I want to say God is a healer. He knows my name. Just go out for you, Francis. The Lord is with you tonight, and also King up with you right there in Arkansas.
And oh, how he walks with me.
Denise, right there in Chicago, this is for you.
And oh, how
Mary Hawkins, for you. Every letter, every telephone call is an expression of God. She's ready for God to do something special for 2022 and 2023. Praying for you, Raymond, Bright Star, praying for you. John, I'm praying for you. Lisa and Joe, I'm praying for you. Get ready for a big breakthrough. I'm praying for the people down in Florida that got caught up in California. God knows what you want. God knows what you need.
And know how you comfort me.
Divine word is God is a healer. I want to invoke the healing refuge, the healing angel. East, west, north, and south.
Yet it's still amazing.
I'm praying for your healing tonight. I'm praying for your breakthrough. Father, you come for healing and deliverance. Praise this body tonight.
So now, I pour out
you're
my
make it.
Heart to you. Oh, yeah.
I'm praying for you. Willa, for you. Sister Kenna, I'm praying for you tonight.
I am a
Michael Edwards, I'm praying for you. Rose Edwards, praying for you. God is just good anyway. I see a good financial pressure being released for you. In the name of the Almighty God, the light and the salvation of our existence.